This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Environmental stories, they are some of the most challenging ones to write as a journalist. The problems posed are not often solved with simple answers. There's a tangled web of sometimes contradictory federal and state laws, and that can make it even trickier to tell these stories. Now, add to that the daily grind of deadlines and the fact that the full effects of human interventions often can't be understood for decades. So reporting these issues, they can be complicated. Well, thankfully, our guest today has had some time to reflect on years of environmental reporting here in the West. Author Niels Nokkenved is here to talk about his new book, To Think Like a Mountain. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So where did you get the idea for this book?
Well, it came actually originally from a book by John Mitchell of the Sierra Club, who was, like me, a writer. And he did a similar thing in the 70s, where he had gone back to visit some of the stories that he had written as a reporter and looked at them a little deeper and to see where they had, you know, where they had gone. And I kind of got the same. I didn't do it quite the same way he did, but basically the same idea. I went back and visited some of the stories that I had reported on and did some more research, a little more in-depth, and had the advantage of having time to reflect rather than facing that daily deadline, as you mentioned.
Right. So then where did you get the title, To Think Like a Mountain? Where did that come from?
Came from Aldo Leopold. Not everybody knows who he is. He's basically known as the father of wildlife science. He's a conservationist and a writer, and it came out of his book called Sand County Almanac. And it's not exactly from his book, but the idea is basically to look at the long-term consequences of our relationship to the land, basically consider what are the consequences beyond your own lifetime, things like unintended consequences. You know, we may think that putting out all forest fires is a really good idea, but if we look at the longer term, we see that fire has a natural role, for example, in the ecosystem, and it's important.
So it's really thinking beyond really your own life and for generations to come.
Correct. Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you did spend time as a reporter. I understand you covered environmental issues in Twin Falls at the Times News.
Yes.
So what big stories did you cover during that time? Like what sticks out to you?
Well, actually the biggest story I covered wasn't really in this book. It would have been radioactive waste. But probably the second biggest is was the Air Force efforts to take over, to create a vast training range in Owyhee County. And I covered that for probably close to 10 years. And it's reviewed in the last chapter in the book. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stands out in my mind in that effort is how people put aside their differences to work together. Ranchers and environmentalists uncharacteristically got together, shook hands, and agreed to work together. It was that kind of a momentous thing. And it shows, really, and I put it in last because it's kind of a kicker. You know, if we get together and put aside our differences, we can do just about anything we put our minds to.
So you're retired now.
Yes.
And you've turned your attention more to this long-form writing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you approach writing news articles compared to writing a book? I mean, of course, the deadline, or at least that daily deadline, isn't there.
Right. Well, probably the most important thing is you have a chance to research original documents. If there's a document out there somewhere, somebody say, I read this somewhere, you might not be able to find it, you know, by deadline. But if you'd have time, you can afford to wait a week or 2 weeks before it, you know, arrives in the mail.
It's amazing what happens when they give you some time, right?
It is.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
And you also get time to think about what you have written, you know, and what holes are there and go back and revise and do more research. So
you actually returned to, as you mentioned, some of the stories that you reported on. So you covered things like sage grouse, mm-hmm. as well as grazing issues, wolf recovery, logging, mining. I mean, that's just naming some.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you learn by taking more time to look at these issues, you know, and because a lot of these played out over decades. Sure.
I think I learned, well, a lot of little things, but how interconnected they all are. Land uses, grazing, mining, and things, they affect fires, for example. Fires affect sage grouse.
So that real interconnectedness of everything.
There really is, yeah. And actually, the one thing that I wanted to mention is that one of the things that is kind of at the basis of a lot of these issues are beavers. Beavers disappeared before settlers really arrived in Idaho, or almost completely, not quite. Mm-hmm. There were a few left. And that changed the nature of streams. It dried up former meadows. It changed the fire patterns, not necessarily frequency or severity, but patterns.
But how they would maybe burn,
how
things
how they
like
would
that.
Burn, yeah. And they also was the first step in wiping out salmon runs, because a lot of beaver ponds, not so much in Idaho perhaps, but further west, were key salmon rearing ponds for young fish. And so when the beavers went away, the dams went away, and then habitat, rearing and some spawning habitat, but mostly rearing habitat, disappeared. And that was, one of the first things. It wasn't the only thing that affected salmon, but it was one.
But to be able to go that far back and to see that interconnectedness that you were talking about. We're talking with author Niels. Oh, now I have to look up how I say your name. Niels Nockenved, correct?
Yes.
There we go. Niels Nockenved. He's written a new book called To Think Like a Mountain. You know, you and I, who have those funny names, you always have to.
Yeah.
It takes a while, right?
Yes.
I would love for you to read a passage of your book. This is in the chapter on wolf reintroduction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The decision to remove wolves from the endangered species list was political, enacted by the U.S. Congress. State and federal policies that seek to reduce wolf numbers in the backcountry while allowing domestic livestock grazing are driven by politics. Wildlife science comes in second. Wolves are neither warm and fuzzy nor evil. They're wild animals and predators just like mountain lions. To live, they must kill. That's their nature. They once were part of the Northwest as much as salmon or buffalo were part of the Great Plains. Some people revere them, others revile them. But their continued presence means that natural systems, at least in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin, and now also in the northern Rocky Mountains, remain wild enough for wolves. And wolves add a complexity to the landscape that in the long run benefits those wild ecosystems.
So on an issue like wolf reintroduction, and we could even put sage-grouse protection in that, how does science interact with policy?
Well, sometimes it works really, really quite well, and other times, it the science becomes inconvenient because it affects certain interests. Some people have a vested interest. Let's say ranchers, for example, in grazing, in the particular grazing system that they're used to, the introduction of wolves or the attempt to conserve sage grouse can affect how they operate.
So in all of the time that you've spent reporting and the gathering of information that you've done and writing this book, do you have any idea of how we can actually make better science-driven decisions on a political level?
That's hard. But I think the answer is a little bit in what I talked about earlier. In deciding that we're going to solve the issue, and rather than picking on the people who disagree with us, find out the places that we agree. Usually the science will come down someplace. Salmon is a really good issue. I mean, a good example of that. There are lots of conflicting ideas about who's at fault and what the best solution is. To me, the answer is yes, we're all at fault, and all of the things that the science points to are part of the problem. And if we recognize that, and we can work together, like the ranchers and the environmentalists did in Owyhee County, and we can come to a conclusion, to a solution.
And wouldn't that be a good thing, right, is to finding that common ground?
Yeah, It is, I think. That would mean we would have salmon. And I like salmon.
I want to thank you for coming in today and
thank
talking with us.
Me.
We've been talking with author Niels Nokkenved. He's written a new book. It is called To Think Like a Mountain. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.